Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, we'll reach in there, we'll pull the baby out, clip the cord, but not in a creepy way.
Oh, no. That's creepy just hearing it.
Awkward.
All background noises today brought to you by Rambunctious Children and Dogs.
Now with the optional accessory pack of background lawnmower noise.
And washing machine that might lift up any moment. Driven by a carny.
A drunk carny.
Yes.
The drunk deaf carny, I believe.
His nickname is Flash. It's not because
I would actually call him Limpy.
I was going to say, it's not because he's fast. Okay, well, hey, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1996 movie Kingpin, directed by the Farrelly Brothers.
And I didn't know it was a Farrelly Brothers flick when I picked it.
Yeah, well, when was the last time you saw this prior to just this week?
Well, it's been, I think I made Travis watch it probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. But I must have, I'm guessing I was intoxicated because it was as, my recollection is it was funny as ever. But when I watched it last night, I was like, I've clearly seen this so many times, I've worn the funny off of it.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because it doesn't seem, well, we'll get into the specific jokes involved. But I mean, realizing.
I still laughed a couple times at some really horrible moments. But for the most part, I was like, and you know, it wasn't a terrible movie. You know, I still think that if you haven't seen it, it's hilarious. You should watch it. You will laugh at least a couple times. And it really does have some great performances.
Yeah, it's not quite the Farrelly Brothers movie that There's Something About Mary is, but it's right up there.
Oh, I hated that movie.
I mean, the Farrelly Brothers did Dumb and Dumber, There's Something About Mary, Outside Providence.
I love Dumb and Dumber.
Shallow Hal, and, you know, and others, but those are the notable ones. So what I wrote in my notes is, oh, yeah, we can expect a lot of bathroom humor in this movie.
Well, and the opening of the film, this song, Bad Reputation by Freddie Johnston, I thought, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I remember this movie now. Plus, I was reading in the credits, he composed most of the music that wasn't, wasn't pop music.
Yeah, he did what's basically the score.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, it's got good music in it, and we'll talk about that, too. I think doing our music episode / So I Married an Axe Murderer got me more thinking about the music selection for movies. And I have a little rant at the end of this one, not because of the movie itself, but because of some aspect of it. But we'll get there when we get to the music section of the whole thing.
Okay.
But I enjoyed watching it again. I think I watched it on video. I didn't watch it in the theater first, I don't think. But
yeah, I don't think I ever saw it in the theater.
I thought it was funny. It's really absurdist humor in lots of places. But it's hard to go wrong with Woody Harrelson and Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And they're both just so great.
Yeah. And you really do feel, I mean, the beginning of the movie, you feel really bad for Woody Harrelson.
Oh, yeah. Woody Harrelson plays this straight. And yeah. So does Bill Murray. You know, he just, his character is more funny than Woody Harrelson's character is. But, you know, they all play this pretty straight. In fact, even Randy Quaid plays this pretty straight. Because everything is so absurd around this movie. That anybody who, you know, if a character is overacting, it's not going to work. It's not going to be as funny.
Right. There was no overacting in this movie.
Yeah, not so much. Shall we just get into the plot and go from there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is a lovely little sports movie. We have a main character, Roy Munson, played by Woody Harrelson, and he is a bowling prodigy, and he wins the 1979 Iowa State Amateur Championship, and plans to leave his tiny hometown of Ocelot, Iowa, and go on the professional bowlers tour. So his first tournament, he wins, defeating an established pro named Ernie McCracken, Big Earn, played by Bill Murray. Now, Big Earn is he is a smarmy, underhanded guy. And he introduces Roy to the art of hustling. Hustling other people by playing bowling games for money, not hustling like prostitution.
Biggern is the sitcom equivalent of Larry from Three's Company.
You mean the big screen equivalent?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he is. Absolutely. Yeah. But he's not quite as... He's not quite as self-deprecating as Larry turned out to be in that show.
No, and not quite the ladies' man either.
No, not at all. Although he wants to be, and maybe he is, just not in the periods of time that we see him. But I love the fact that this movie both takes bowling very, very seriously, and also, you know, revels in the absurdity of professional bowling.
Yes, you're right. It absolutely takes it seriously, but also there's a lot of backhanded kind of serving up of the bowling world.
Oh, yeah. No, they make fun of 1979. They make fun of small towns. You know, they go the whole nine. It's pretty great. So McCracken convinces Roy to help him go hustle some bowlers, and the con that they're running goes quite badly, and McCracken ditches Roy Munson. And Roy ends up having the bad guys feed his bowling arm into the ball return of a bowling lane, and it takes his arm off, and he is left with a hook, a prosthetic hook, upon which he can slide the fakest, most absurd, crazy rubber hand I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, the rubber hand is a whole different character in this movie.
Yeah, it has its own agent, probably.
Yeah, and it doesn't resemble anything in real life.
No.
Yeah, at least I hope not.
I think that was a comedic choice. Cause it squeaks. It's like a squeaky toy.
Oh yeah, the guy who did the Foley for the rubber hand, he must have been having a wonderful time. Cause it's just so absurd. Every part of it is so absurd.
And deservedly so. Yeah.
So we have this pretty tragic, you know, thing happened in 1979, and then you flash forward to Roy Munson, the adult, who is
17 years later.
Yeah, he has not taken that very well. He is selling bowling supplies.
Darn near rock bottom, I would say.
Yeah, he is drinking heavily, and he can't make enough money to even pay his rent. So he has to pay for his rent in his CD apartment building in Scranton, Pennsylvania. By sleeping with the landlady, who's played by Lynn Shay, and I love Lynn Shay. Are you familiar with her?
I've seen her in other things. I don't know what, but I know I've seen her in other things.
Well, she was Magda in Something About Mary, like the old woman that was really super tan.
I hate it.
But she was also in, and you probably haven't seen this, I'm guessing, but she was also in Insidious and Insidious 2.
No.
Where she played, this is a horror movie. It's not a comedy at all. But she's pretty great. And really, in real life, actually, she's quite pretty. So she laughs about, actresses getting facelifts and things. She's like, oh, yeah, I have to tone it down for my roles.
I'm looking at her at IMDb. Good Lord, she's done a crap load of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and she just looks like she's having so much fun. But look at her picture. Her picture looks nothing like her character's.
Yeah, I'm guessing a lot of this must be TV appearances and whatnot, because it's like her entries, there's like a dozen entries per year. Easy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure she's in almost every Fairley Brothers movie. You know, that's another good thing about being a director, or in this case, a team of directors who... You know, they make it big, and then they continue to employ their friends who happen to be also talented.
Oh, she was in Contagion.
She's been in a ton of stuff. She's great, Lynn Shay. She's a national treasure.
I haven't seen a lot of stuff that she's been in, so I'm picking the things I've seen that I think you've seen. You've seen Contagion, right?
Yeah. It was kind of a snooze fest.
Really?
Yeah, I may have to revisit. But yeah.
I didn't hate Contagion, but I did laugh horribly inappropriately out loud in the movie theater, like loud enough, because Travis and I went and saw this in the theater, loud enough that I think it made Travis a little uncomfortable when they, spoiler alert, when they filleted open Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
Well, that's always...
but I just, I was like, awesome. And I just started, I laughed and giggled like a schoolgirl.
You have come a long way since Pulp Fiction, my friend.
Well, yeah. Well, in some instances, in that instance I had, there's other things that I still, I'm like, ugh. But yes, no, I do not quite have the same reaction I did as the Pulp Fiction moment. You're correct.
So back to the landlady. So they do the over the top Fairley Brothers bathroom humor with the landlady, who is super gross looking and super into having sex with him, and he's not digging at any of it at all. So that's of course rife for hilarity. But then on a sales call, Rory catches the sight of an Amish man, Ishmael Borg, played by Randy Quaid. And Randy Quaid, when he's, I guess, sane, he's perfectly acceptable actor. I mean, he's actually pretty good.
Well, don't forget that this movie was, it was a long time ago.
Well, that's true. Was it before he got married? Yeah, was it before he got married to his current wife or his most recent wife, the one that they went crazy together?
I have no idea.
Didn't they try to rob a bank?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. It was a misunderstanding, they said.
Sure. Yeah, he must be hanging out with Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, exactly. The Wizinator. You remember the Wizinator?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah. So, Roy Munson sees Ishmael Borg rolling this pretty good bowling game, like 230 or whatever, rolling a pretty good game. He asks him what his average is, and he's like, in the 200s.
296, I think you said, or something like that.
Yeah.
250.
Yeah,
really high.
Yeah, it's really high. With bowling scores, you can't get like in the 290s, I don't think. I mean, you would be really hard-pressed to do that. Well,
300 is a perfect game.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of room between, because of the way the scoring works, it's crazy. Anyway, so Roy wants to turn Ishmael pro. He'll act as a manager. And Ishmael declines because he's Amish and he has no interest in worldly affairs. And bowling is his only vice. So after Roy looks at his life a little more closely, he decides to infiltrate the Amish community to somehow convince Ishmael to turn into a pro bowler. And there's some more hilarity. Because it's always fun. It's always fun to make fun of the Amish.
Well, to disparage an entire community that really... Well, I guess... But to be fair, they're never going to see the movie.
Exactly. They're not going to complain. So there you go.
Right.
Unless they're on their Rumspringa, they're never going to know.
That's true.
And actually, the reason he goes to get Ishmael is because he has discovered there's this $1 million winner-take-all bowling tournament in Reno. And so he thinks this will be his chance to finally... make it big by coaching this guy. So he goes. Go ahead.
Did they ever in the movie say that it was his Rumspringa?
Oh no, it was not. Not at all.
They never said that.
No, I think he went off on his own, which is why they sent the other guy back to bring him back.
Yeah, the brother.
But I don't think we knew as much about Rumspringa as we do now.
I think that's very true.
And it could have been worse. If it was his rum for me, he would have been out. Actually, he would have been a lot younger, I think. And he also would have been out selling meth and stuff. But
yeah, I could see that.
Have you seen The Devil's Playground? It's a documentary about Rumspringa.
No.
It's really
sounds fun, though.
It's a good documentary. It's very interesting. But one of the guys in the documentary is. A guy who is, because, you have, 2 years or something to determine whether you want to go back and be in the church forever. And
2 years, wow.
I think so. I think it's quite a while. And this guy is basically a meth dealer, and his choice is going back to the church or go to jail for a very long time.
Oh.
Yeah, so, anyway. But I guess they have, all these Amish kids have cell phones and stuff, and they all meet up for these massive drug parties and things all over the Midwest. Anyway, very interesting.
Wow.
Because if you're raised very, very, very strictly and then get basically the ability to do whatever you feel like, apparently you go hog wild.
Wow. Well, I guess if anybody would know how to party, it's somebody who's never partied before.
I guess, yeah. Well, anyway, so, but back to a kinder, gentler time when we knew very little about the Amish, except that, at least in one case, they didn't have a cow, it was a bull. Ba-dum-bum-psh.
Yeah.
So there's some over-the-top
humor. That kind of set the tone for the movie.
Yeah, there's a lot, again, there's a lot of toilet humor in this whole thing. So Roy manages to convince Ishmael to go on the road with him. By hook or by crook, and only to find out that in a what I think is sort of a clever thing, Ishmael has already told Roy that, you know, as an Amish person, he does 1.5 times what a normal person, an English person, they call him, would be doing. So, of course, he always rolls 15-frame games, and that's where his 260 average or whatever comes from, which is pretty clever, I think. No?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it was a good gimmick.
And it leads to the fact that Roy cannot get a break. In fact, even Ish, as an Amish guy, knows the phrase, like, to pull a Munson.
Yeah, Munson has become the vernacular.
Which is pretty great.
Right. It's kind of hilarious because, they keep saying it, and, you know, at first, Roy is kind of dim-witted, and so Roy doesn't get all... In the beginning, he doesn't pick up that Munson is him.
Oh, yeah, no, Roy is a sad sack, but yeah, it's because of his own... Hey, he's made his bed, even right. though, obviously, Big Earn left him at the worst time possible. You know, he was willing to go through with the whole thing, so... And, of course, if he hadn't been so proud of his 1979 amateur championship and wore the big ring on his finger, maybe the ball return machine wouldn't have done so much damage. If any of the workplace safety videos I've seen are true at all. So then this movie turns into kind of a road trip to get to Reno, where along the way they meet what Wikipedia calls a hoodlum named Stanley, Rob Moran, and his girlfriend, who is Claudia, Vanessa Angel. Was there something striking about this performance to you, as it was to me, by one Miss Vanessa Angel?
It was porn-esque.
Well, also, she cannot keep her accent. Just pick one.
Well,
I don't care. Just pick an accent.
I think she slipped, because at one point she had like a Jersey accent.
I think she's trying to be Jersey, but she's naturally from England. So,
yeah.
And she keeps saying, like, pronouncing things in kind of with British vowels.
Yeah.
There's no reason she can't be British, really. There's none. Not a single one.
I didn't really pick up on her. I mean, I noticed that her accent was a little faded at points, but it didn't distract me.
Oh, it irritated the crap out of me. And the fact that she's the only female of note in the whole entire cast, except for Lynn Shea, of course, who's playing way over the top. But, you know, really, there are no strong female characters in this movie, which is fine. I mean, I'm not against the movie for that reason. But they kind of treat her character sort of shabbily, I think. Actually, I think they treated the character shabbily by casting her in the role, but oh well. She's pretty. I mean, that works.
Yeah. Well, the movie only worked if she was pretty, though.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, the plot of the movie, I mean, the point of her, she had to have been pretty, so.
Yeah. So she does that, but they guess that they should have cut lines from her.
Well, yeah. she didn't have a lot of lines, though. When you watch the movie, she didn't have a lot of lines. She had a lot of screen presence.
Well, her performance would have been better if she had just stuck to gestures.
Well, you know, part of the draw for this was you know, that she was, you know, very scantily clad in tight clothing most of this movie.
Yeah, but not enough to make it worthwhile. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that depends on if you're 12 or if you're 20.
That's true. If you're 12, this is great because it's all full of poop jokes and whatever.
Exactly.
But it's not like she gets topless either in this movie. Right?
Well, no, but again,
I mean, there's the nipple joke, but other than that, I mean,
yeah, but that's enough to fuel a 12-year-old, I'd be willing to bet.
Well, I suppose.
You know, times are changed, yeah. But I guess with the internet and everything, yada, yada.
By the way, when they run into this bar, did you recognize the actor, well, the person who played Skidmark?
Which one was Skidmark?
Skidmark was one of the guys that they met at a bar, restaurant or something. He's one of the mulleted guys. I think there's two scenes with pretty similar.
Which part of the movie?
Let's see. Pretty much just after they get out of the Stanley and Claudia's mansion and take Claudia on the road. They're eating at restaurant.
Is that the restaurant where the fight happens?
Yeah, I think so. And the guy who plays Skidmark is Roger Clemens, baseball's own Roger Clemens.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so anyway.
But I wouldn't have recognized Roger Clemens. I mean,
yeah, there's some stunt casting in this movie, but that's okay. Again, it's fun. This is a comedy.
Oh, yeah, because goddamn Chris Elliott.
Well, you're not a big Chris Elliott fan.
I can't stand him. I can't stand him. I have a visceral response to him. And I dearly love my younger brother. I do. But for some reason, he bought me one Christmas Chris Elliott's Get a Life on DVD, and I don't know if he did it because he thought I was a big Chris Elliott fan, or if he did it, like, ironically because he knew I hated it.
And in our family, either is possible.
Yes, but the likelier of the two is that he knew I hated it. So.
Well, exactly, yeah. So, in which case, it's a funny gift.
And you know what, though? I still have it. I have it, you know, I own it. I still have it. So.
I really like Chris Elliott in There's Something About... There's Something About Mary. Yeah, he's fine in that. But no, in Everybody Loves Raymond, he was funny.
I would just like him in a coffin.
Yeah, well, man, you're sort of a harsh critic. Wait, Judge Jason is back.
I sentence him to death. No, I just there's something about him.
And he's from entertainment royalty. You know that, right?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I think Bob from Bob and Ray, I think the legendary radio duo, is his dad.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, yeah. So
there's something about him. I just find him so skeezy and grotesque that I just.
Oh, but that's why he's there. That's the character that he's playing.
Yeah, but I don't want to pay to see that. That's the thing. He was so disgusting, and there's something about Mary that that's part of the reason I don't like that movie. The other movie is that because it's starring, you know, Ben Stiller and
Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz, thank you.
So not a big fan of Cameron Diaz.
No, I don't hate her, but I just there's not many movies I've seen her in that I'm like. There's not many movies I've seen her in that I think that the movie has benefited from her as an actress.
I want to disagree, but I can't think of a movie recently that I can, or at all, except for Something About Mary. I mean, she was pretty good in, what is it, the Brothers McMillan movie? She's the One with Jennifer Aniston?
I don't think I've seen that.
And I have never seen Charlie's Angels, but...
I think she was okay in Shrek, but that was just her voice.
I mean, I guess I just don't have anything against her.
I mean, she was in The Mask with... Jim Carrey, but that was a barely passable movie anyway.
Yeah, well, I think that was her big break, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah, so anyway, now it's a threesome road movie where we have Claudia and Roy and Ish who are traveling to Reno. And Claudia was tired of the abusive relationship with her boyfriend Stanley, so she ends up taking some money that they're using and they're putting a stake together so when they get to Reno, I guess they can bet on themselves. Is that the idea?
I think so.
Roy and Claudia end up being at odds because Roy's trying to scam Ish and senses that Claudia might be trying to scam them both. So Roy tries to take Ishmael away and Claudia kind of ends up stopping that. And Ishmael decides he's just going to go out on his own. He leaves them both together. So now it's a twosome road movie to go to Reno to try to find Ish.
But that's one of the funniest parts of the movie, in my opinion, is when Randy Quaid ends up in drag.
Yeah, there's some fun. There's a reference to littering that's pretty funny. I skipped a part that I thought was actually particularly funny when it's just Roy and Nish headed there. At one point, Roy calls Ish a banana head, which I thought that was just a funny line in the middle of the movie. Anywho.
Random.
Well, it was just like, it was like, blah, 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 you banana head. You guys just never hear banana head in the wild.
Well, I think there was probably a fair bit of ad-libbing in this movie.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine that.
But yeah, the drag queen scene, I thought that was, because, first of all, it looks better in drag.
Well, it's just funny. It's visually, it's a funny gag.
So over the top, ridiculous that I had to laugh. I did actually still laugh out loud.
Well, I think one of the things that made me laugh is when they finally got to Reno. And by the way, I mean, I'll just mention here that talking about a comedy always makes for a shorter conversation, because a lot of what makes a comedy good is it kind of builds and builds and builds and lots of little things.
And, well, and also, this movie, it was atmospheric. You had to be in the movie to get the comedy.
Exactly. So there's not a lot, you know, other than hitting the plot points, there's not a lot we can really revel in. And even if we did, even if we just took the jokes beat by beat, it wouldn't be all that interesting, I don't think, to listen to. Or even really to talk about, maybe, if we weren't watching the movie together. But I have to love that when they show up in Reno, they see the sign for Jefferson's on Ice.
I wrote that down, actually.
Yeah, I love
that.
That's
in my note. Oh, Wheezy.
Oh, and they actually have Sherman Hemsley in the movie. Is just hilarious.
Yeah, well, one of my notes I wrote down was, since we actually passed it long ago. In the beginning of the movie where Ernie and Roy are first doing their grift in the first con that they're trying to pull, there's a big plate of purple pickled eggs that Bill Murray's eating.
Oh, see, I didn't even notice that detail.
Yeah. And then Stan, of course, had the crazy raccoon mascara eyes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, Stan, the kind of the mafia guy, although there are a lot of mullets in this movie, and it may just because of the time period.
Yeah. And the getaway song, when they left Stan's house, I wrote, oh, thank God, it could have just as easily been a Spin Doctor song.
So what was the getaway song?
I don't know, but it was adequately appropriate, but could have easily been a horrible Spin Doctor song, because it sounded almost the same. And the catchphrase that kept coming up that Woody Harrelson kept using because he repeated it from his dad, which was kind of the sad part of the story, the part of his dad, was sweeter than Yoo-Hoo.
Well, yeah.
Product placement.
But also kind of Midwest, kind of, you know, the one thing after watching this movie I thought was the thing that makes the Farrelly Brothers movies good is that they can deliver all this really lowbrow toilet humor, but at the end, and a lot of it is because they have developed characters, but also music and tone and everything. At the end of the movie, it's like you've had a good time. It's got like a sentimental, fun ending to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a feel-good movie, kind of, you know?
And this movie has some really good lines. You know, one of the best lines Woody Harrelson delivers.
You're not talking about the banana head again, are you?
No. Woody Harrelson delivers it. So Roy delivers it to, what's her face? To the chick.
To Claudia.
And he says, half the dresses you have got need two hairdos to wear. Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
But then there was the Jefferson's on Ice. But, and then, you know, inexplicably, at the end of this movie, spoiler alert again. I'm so tired. I can't even. Oh my God, Blues Travelers. Really? Blues Traveler? Really?
Oh, come on. Well, you know why? John Popper was the MC of the bowling tournament.
Well, yeah, I saw that. But also, I think at the end of the movie, and I looked this up on IMDb, but she's not credited. I swear to God, though. Do you still have the movie?
Yeah.
So go back and watch. When at the end of the movie, when Claudia and Roy go back to Ishmael's house, and Ishmael's mother looks like Mary Gross.
Oh, interesting. Could be.
I swear, and it sounds like her, but she's not credited.
And normally she would at least be listed as uncredited.
Right, but I don't. But
even if she were Hitler.
Yeah, I know. but go back and take a look, because I swear it's her. But I cannot, I spent an hour last night trying to find out. It's not under her IMDb, it's not listed in IMDb under the movie. It may not be her, it may be somebody who has a striking resemblance to her, but it looks and sounds just like her.
Oh, that's funny, I'll have to go back and check it out.
Of course, nobody listening probably knows who Mary Gross is besides you and me.
Well, no. I mean, Mary Gross is part of Saturday Night Live history. You know, if they've suffered through the Dana Carvey movies and the Mike Myers movies, they're certainly familiar with the...
I've seen my share fair of Dana Carvey movies.
Yeah. And by the way, Dana Carvey's great. And actually, Mike Myers is pretty great, too. But anyway, that's we won't even...
yeah.
Well, okay. So, of course, this is a sports movie. So it's going to end up in the tournament, you know, and through wacky slapstick comedy, Ishmael breaks his wrist. So Roy has to bowl with his fake arm. And I really like the scene, you know, the whole tournament at the end. I thought the music was great. I thought the costumes were great. You know, they threw in real professional bowlers. So if you were into that, you got the joke and thought that was extra funny. They threw in real sports announcers, so if you got that, you thought that was extra funny. They threw in this good music that kind of harkened back to the 70s anyway. And then, of course, Bill Murray, he is so funny. And the fact that they have that ridiculous comb-over and all of his like hand, wrist, thumb braces and everything, back brace.
Yeah.
It's just hysterical. I thought it was really funny.
Bill Murray's hair could have had its own, should have its own entry as well.
Oh, it was so funny. It's just watching that last bowling tournament scenes, all of them, you know, all of the actual tournament. It's just so great just to watch Bill Murray.
Right.
Because, you know, while the Woody Harrelson character, they're still making use of that funky rubber hand. In fact, he is nicknamed Rubber Man because of his hand.
Yeah.
Keeps like falling off and going with the ball down. Anyway, that's, you know, silly humor. But Bill Murray's humor, just the fact that his you know, his comb over, because he's so sweaty, ends up sticking straight up through most of the last part of the tournament. It's just funny.
Yeah, I agree.
And here's a piece of IMDb trivia that may or may not be true, but I want to believe that it is. So here's spoiler. Here's how the movie actually, the tournament ends. The tournament ends with Roy having to pick up a 7-10 split. Nearly impossible. And he does. Which means that to win the game, Bill Murray's character has to bowl 3 strikes. He has to strike out the entire 10th frame. And then he'll win by 1 pin. And at least in the IMDb trivia, Bill Murray rolled 3 strikes. There were no retakes.
Wow.
So that's pretty great, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a bowling movie. It's fine. It's fun. And the fact that that Roy loses fits perfectly with his own character. So the epilogue is you've come back to find that Roy has been sponsored. Or actually, Claudia ends up deserting them and she comes back. And that's, I think that was sort of unnecessary, add a little unnecessary tension. Although, because Ishmael gets lured back to, or shamed back into the community, Roy is all by himself for the last bit of the tournament. And so that adds to the heartbreak that is Roy Munson. I mean, Woody Harrelson plays it so well throughout the whole movie that, all it would have taken is for the Farrelly brothers to just turn the switch to a little bit dimmer, and this would have been a dark movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he can
immediately... Well, and you can tell that they almost wanted to go there in the beginning of the movie, because the scene with his dad.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The beginning of the movie with his dad was over the top, but then later when he talks about his dad and how he didn't go back because his dad died and he was ashamed, that's a big downer.
Well, and on one hand, that's all just playing up the sports movie cliche, but still, it's powerful. You know, the reason why it's part of so many sports movies is because it works. It's just a human touch to the movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, not living up to your dad's expectations. In fact, when his expectations aren't unreasonable, you know, they're perfectly reasonable expectations. And
yeah, told him to be a good man.
Exactly.
A moral man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so all that, I think, was to send up the trope that sports movies have, but still it works because it's got a sweetness through the whole thing. You know, that's what I credit these guys with, is they can make a movie where they make elaborate jokes involving ejaculate and still It's got a heart.
So IMDb says that the original choice of Ishmael was Chris Farley.
Yeah. Randy Quaid was better, because I think Chris Farley would have been way over the top.
I think so, too. And Jim Carrey was the first choice for Ernie.
Well, it would be a different character.
It would have been a far more frenetic movie had that been the case.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing about Bill Murray is Bill Murray doesn't, his performance isn't very physical. It's more in his mannerisms and his tone. And Jim Carrey, I think, would have been way more physical.
And Michael Keaton was the original person for the Roy Munson role.
Now, I'm a fan of Michael Keaton, but how the hell would you...
Batman.
Well, yeah, exactly, Batman. And what about, have you heard about this Birdman movie coming out?
I'm sorry?
Have you heard about this movie called Birdman?
No.
Okay, it apparently is a dark movie starring Michael Keaton as a superhero, or he plays a superhero in the movies, and then I think it's a serious drama underneath.
Kind of like the original Tick?
I don't know, because I know that the first trailer I saw, I think people were criticizing it that that wasn't that kind of movie, but it's worth looking. YouTube, Michael Keaton, well, Birdman.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry right now.
Oh, okay. Well, how does it describe it?
Upcoming American comedy drama, co-written, produced, and directed by Alejandro González. I don't even know what that name is, so I'm not even going to. Michael Keaton, Emma Stone, Edward Norton, Zach Galifianakis, Naomi Watts, Amy Ryan, and Merritt Weaver. It'll be interesting. Apparently,
if it works, it'll be a brilliant movie.
No relation or connection to the Hanna-Barbera character of the same name.
Yeah, well, which is good.
The plot. Famous for portraying iconic superhero Keaton, struggles to mount a Broadway play. In the days leading up to the opening night, he battles his ego in an attempt to recover his family, his career, and himself.
Okay, so I guess it could just be a saccharine sweet movie.
The play in the film is an adaptation of Raymond Carver's What We Talk About When We Talk About Love.
Huh. Okay. Well, I think I'm in. I don't know. I don't see movies in the theater these days, so I'm sure I will have to catch it on DVD. But still,
I don't watch a lot of movies in theater. But yeah, no. I mean, it'll be something I'll watch after it comes out. But. I like Michael Keaton. I mean, Michael Keaton, are we done talking about the movie?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything. Yeah, we're done talking about the movie. We're going to talk about the soundtrack in a bit, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. No, it's okay. I like Michael Keaton. I like Michael Keaton movies. You know, Mr. Mom was hilarious. Gung Ho is a great movie.
Oh, yeah, he does that kind of thing really well. I thought, Multiplicity was pretty good. Oh, yeah, he was scary in Pacific Heights, at least as I remember.
Yeah, no, he played good psycho in Pacific Heights, you know, scaring the shit out of Melanie Griffith, so who I despise anyway. So I don't despise her. I just don't like her all that much as an actress. But no, I like Michael Keaton just fine.
But how did he get the role in Batman? I still don't understand.
Well, but how does anybody get the role in Batman these days? I think I think it's whoever's popular at the time.
Well, and considering that the last Batman was Adam West before him, then I guess I can understand it.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, there was Michael Keaton and Val Kilmer and...
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, Batman, I mean, yeah, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Ben Affleck being Batman any... You know, it is being a big deal.
I think he'll be a fine Batman. I think the fanboys can suck it. I think Ben Affleck will be a fine Batman.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying he's going to be like the greatest be-all, end-all, but he can't do a bad job. He will do an okay job.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, worst case, he'll be...
He may do a great job, but...
Yeah, I mean, worst case, he'll be a little over the top. But, yeah, I mean, the job is wearing a suit.
Right.
So, you know, there's that. Anyway. And I guess I don't hold Batman. I mean, for the love of God, it's a comic book. And I realize that there are people there that those are fighting words. But come on.
Oh, they're going to make Thor a chick. They can get over it.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, yeah. I like the idea of creating alternate worlds for characters to inhabit in movies. I mean, that's what makes movies great.
It's not
I guess all movies are alternate worlds for characters to inhabit.
Yeah.
Hello. Startling revelation by Eric. Movies are not all documentaries.
And we have come full circle. The snake is now eating his tail.
Oh, dear. Can we talk about music for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay, so because it takes place in the bowling world in the late 70s at the beginning, you get Disco Inferno.
Yes.
And that's pretty great, always.
Great, by great meaning great, or great meaning, oh, wow.
It's just, it's a great way to indicate a time and place.
Terrible callback.
No, it's just if you play that song, Disco Inferno tells you where you are. You don't need much else. I mean, you need maybe some white belts. Of course, they did the whole costumery, so that was, was
fun. Yeah, between the outfits and the music, you're right. It was a good period piece.
Yeah. But, and then, of course, there's some Blues Traveler in there. Here's the little rant, and it's not a big rant, but, soundtracks for movies are a strange thing. Because sometimes the songs that are in the movie are not in the soundtrack.
Correct.
And sometimes the song on the soundtrack aren't anywhere in the movies.
Yes.
Like if you can see a trailer for a movie that has a great song in the trailer that will never be in the movie and never be in the soundtrack.
And I can give you a great example of that.
Please do.
Wild at Heart, David Lynch.
Okay, so tell me.
The movie trailer was Chris Isaak's Wicked Game, and that was before Chris Isaak had released the track, pretty sure. And it was hot. That song was hot. And people wanted that song, and it wasn't in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think it ended up being in the movie, but it wasn't on the soundtrack.
Which is, again, it's a strange thing, and it must have to do with rights and stuff. I don't know. But, like, one of the big parts of the last, the ultimate championship or the games leading up to the final match between the two, combatants in the battle that is the bowling tournament. Mm-hmm. They played Something in the Air by Thunderclap Newman. Now, I recognize this song. I mean, you hear the opening lines of Call Out the Instigator because there's something in the air. And the rest of it's great. It's like late 60s, early 70s. I didn't know anything about it. In fact, when I looked it up, I'm like, Thunderclap Newman? What the hell is that? So I learned a little bit about music history.
Well,
Thunderclap Newman is a band produced by Pete Townshend of The Who.
Oh.
They were put together in 1968, and they broke up in 1971 because they didn't have anything in common and didn't like each other personally or musically. So it's an example of Pete Townshend.
Why did they get together in the first place?
Well, because Pete Townshend of The Who says, hey, you guys are great. Let's do this thing. And they said, sure. So he was
like a side project.
Yeah. And he was trying to promote two of the people that were the main part of the band. But so yeah, it just didn't work out.
He was basically somewhere where he heard them and he was high at the time and was like, hey, we should do a band together.
Well, and he's Pete Townshend. So I'm sure he doesn't ever sleep. He just thinks about music. Well, and searches for underage male pornography. At least did a little bit.
I was going to say child pornography. But
yes. Poor Pete. It's not poor Pete, I guess. In this country, he would have been branded forever as a criminal. In the UK.
I think it's actually, it would be little Pete. No, never mind.
Well, yeah. Anyway. Okay, so we have Thunderclap Newman, Something in the Air, which is just great, and it's fun, and it's the right place in the movie, it's the right song for the time. Then we have two other songs, or appearances. Do you know who sings the national anthem at the very end?
No.
That's Urge Overkill, and that's just a very, again, time and place thing. It's a very, weren't they the ones that did the remake of Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon?
Oh, from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, I think you're right.
So it's just
was great, by the way.
Oh no, yeah, and they were hot at the time. That's what, just they're the Blues Traveler equivalent. And then of course the end song or the song for the big song for the actual final match was Showdown by ELO. And I forget how much I like ELO. In fact, I didn't know how much I liked ELO until I listened to all of those Traveling Wilburys. Well, the Traveling Wilburys' first album, and then all of the Jeff Lynne produced albums around that time, because Jeff Lynne produced the two Tom Petty albums at the time, produced George Harrison's Cloud Nine at the time, and they all have that Jeff Lynne feel to them.
That kind of ethereal.
Well, he's just got a sensibility. It's kind of country. It's kind of, you know, it's orchestrated in Electric Light fashion. But it's also like solid rock, you know, it's got a solid rock underpinning and some fun stuff happening on a slightly different level too, which may be kind of a pretentious way of saying it, but it's just good stuff. So when I hear ELO, cause I kind of lumped ELO in with, you know, the fact that they did the Xanadu soundtrack.
See, that's what I was just going to say, Xanadu.
So if you're going to, you know, I mean, you tie the band to disco roller skates and you think, oh yeah, that's not great. That's not what I was into. That's not, I mean, I have no nostalgia for that sort of thing because it just never really appealed to me. So it's not even that I'm listening to it ironically. It's that I'm finding some solid rock stuff in there, you know. Anyway, so like Do Ya is pretty good. You know, all that, all their big stuff is great. And of course, because it played all the time while we were growing up, it's one of those familiar sounds. It's kind of like, it's like a blanket you can use to cuddle up with on a cold night. Sometimes it's a little scratchy, you know. Sometimes you don't want it right next to your skin because it's too scratchy. But other times, I don't know. I have no idea. It smells of wet dog, but still, it brings you back to a time in your life.
That you needed to do laundry?
I guess. I think it brings you to a time where Axl Rose would hide in your hair.
What? What are you talking about? Axl Rose would hide in your hair? Are you high?
What's that?
Wow.
That's,
Hold on.
Here's my thought process, and I hate to have to describe it, but tell me if I'm wrong, because it's very possible I've taken a left turn in this thought process, but here we go.
Please, I wish explanation. This is going to be fantastic.
Okay. In Sweet Child of Mine, does he not say that her hair reminds him of the one safe place where as a child he lie to wait for the thunder and the rain to quietly pass him by?
I have no earthly idea.
Okay, I'm just saying, sometimes ELO is like a blanket that reminds me of hair that Axl Rose would curl up with to wait for the thunder and the rain to leave him by.
Wow, okay. Well, I'm going to take your word for that. I'm going to choose to think that you're correct, just so that I can forever emblazon this into my synapses.
Yeah, well, this is just proof that I don't pre-write any of these observations except for little observations about movies. Anyway.
So this was not a note you jotted down to just kind of eject into the podcast.
No,
this
is something, dear Lord.
Fire.
Dear Lord, I would have hopefully done a better job.
Yeah. So thank you for bringing up ELO, because now I have some stupid ELO song stuck in my head, and I don't know why. I swear it was in the movie Jobs, but it's not on the official soundtrack. Although the movie Jobs had way more music than the soundtrack, so I'm sure it was in the movie Jobs, because it was the right time frame of that stupid ELO turned to stone. Stupid song.
Well, I mean, it's a living thing.
I'm sorry.
Isn't it a terrible thing to lose?
Oh, yeah. Not going to go to
also, Don't Bring Me Down, Bruce, which I don't understand, but, you know, still.
I don't think anybody does. I think that's the point. It's like the closing song for WKRP in Cincinnati.
Okay, describe.
The closing song from WKRP in Cincinnati doesn't have any intelligible lyrics at all.
Yeah,
on purpose.
No, it's just it's like the reprise, right? Is that the word?
It's a completely different song.
Oh, okay. It's not just the normal theme without lyrics?
No, it's the crazy guy singing this loud, obnoxious music. You'll have to drop it in. They told the guy when he did it, like, just ad-lib everything. And so he makes it up and there's no lyrics. He's just making sounds.
Well, I am very impressed by that anyway. I love that idea.
But it was like the Louie of the time, because everybody thought, like, everybody made up their own stuff for it, and they're like, no, it means there's nothing. We just made it up.
There was a progressive auto song that had, it was notable for having like a, almost like a pencil drawing, but I think it was drawn in text of a motorcycle as it's driving down the street, and it's saving money, and it's to advertise that Progressive also uses, you know. Well, there was like a little 30 or 20 second piece of music that accompanied that.
Yeah.
And Kelly, and not just Kelly, lots of people were online saying, who is the artist that does this song? It's great. It just reminds me of all these, you know, it's like sort of a Born to Be Wild kind of thing, but it's a little more modern. And it's like, oh, this is great. I want this on my road CD. Well, it turns out that's because the advertising agency said, we need a song that kind of sounds like a motorcycle driving song. And they said, okay, we'll just do one of those.
Geico.
I think Ford got sued for that by Bette Midler.
Maybe for doing that kind of thing.
Exactly, because they copied her likeness.
Oh, they probably put in a memo someplace. We need a Bette Midler type song instead of saying we need a bathhouse singer song.
I'm pretty sure Bette Midler sued, and I think it's the song "Do You Want to Dance?" And I don't even know why I remember that shit. Oh, sorry for my language. Sorry, Mom. Plaintiff appellant versus Ford Motor Company.
And did you win?
What do you know? I don't know, because I just think I opened a judgment. Oh.
Oh, you know what? Hey, can we, while you're researching that, did you hear about the settlement that Adam Carolla did with the patent trolls?
I'm sorry.
Are you familiar about the patent troll podcast thing?
No.
Okay. You know, patent trolls are people that, or companies or whatever, but they're just basically folks who go out and buy patents and then try to convince companies that their product is actually based on this patent. And in the case of the podcasting patent that's been used, the guy who owns this patent, which I think was like in the 80s or something, and it was a patent for distributing talk show stuff. Like it was for audio subscriptions, but it was cassettes that were delivered in the mail. And the people who had the patent just kind of renewed it and updated it slightly however long they were supposed to. And so they went after Mark Maron and Adam Carolla and also Jesse Thorne and Maximum Fun, and they basically said, you know, you're using this thing that we developed, so you have to either cease and desist doing podcasting, or you can pay us a licensing fee to use our technology. And I think Adam Carolla like raised maybe $500,000 with the Electronic Freedom Foundation to try to fight these people. And basically tell them, and of course, these companies exist in like East Texas or someplace where the judges are more favorable to patent trolls.
Yeah.
And the idea, by the way, is that these patent guys don't want to ever go to court. They don't want you to stop doing your business. They just want a slight piece of it. And they won't even tell you what they want. They're not saying, I want $1 per year for you to do this. It's all based on what they think they can squeeze out of you.
Right. So it's just extortion.
It's totally extortion. And so a lot of, like, the Electronic Freedom Foundation were saying, look, this is a great opportunity for fighting against this. Because
if we get a judgment, then it becomes case law.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that didn't happen because they ended up settling with Carolla. And Carolla can't talk about it for a couple months. So the good thing is that they went away. In fact, in the press release, whatever the patent company said, we didn't realize how little podcasters make, so this is not worth our while to continue this.
Oh, please.
But the bad thing is, I mean, probably Carolla isn't going to pay anything. But the bad thing is they could perhaps force these patent trolls to pay for Carolla's legal expenses, which would have been a blow if that would have been in case law, that it was allowed to have the judgment, you know, when you lose, to pay the other half's lawyer fees, it would shut down a lot of patent trolls.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing, and it's one thing when Apple and Samsung will fight patent battles between them. That's like, you know, that's just two big companies duking it out with strange, like, arcane law that I don't even care about too much, except as a consumer.
That's really just who's got a bigger penis contest.
Exactly. But when you're talking about some office or some corporation that doesn't have any employees, that owns all these crazy, obscure patents, and patents these days are crazy. So, you know, if your invention, I mean, it seems like, I mean, the patent that the podcasters say they own has nothing to do with anything in the computer or anything. It's a subscription service for audio recordings. That's all.
Yeah.
And they don't, you know, they're not going to go fight Apple because Apple will destroy them. So instead, and actually, you know what? I think, if I remember correctly, I think Apple actually paid them money to just go away. So that set a bad example because that meant they got some money out of it. And so they saw a taste of it after the rest
Apple,
of it.
My guess would be that Apple figured that it was cheaper for them just to throw the money at them, make them go away, than it was to pay their attorney to fight something that was just going to end up being a nuisance that they were going to win anyway.
Well, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, if they're going to throw their money away to fight, they're going to do it at Samsung.
Yeah.
Rather than every little, you know, it's like if the IRS. If the IRS says you owe them a couple of bucks, if it's a couple of bucks you can afford to write a check for, just write a check.
Yeah, well.
Because it's not worth fighting. Yeah, it's not worth fighting over little bits of money on principle unless you have a lot of money to spend.
Right. Or you think you have a lot of principle and you don't want to eat ever again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the more principle you have and corresponding to the less sense you have doesn't make you being very principled and absolutely a moron about it. Doesn't seem to be very commendable in my eyes. I don't hold someone in higher esteem because, you know, like they went down with the sinking ship. If all they could have done was swallowed their pride a little bit and the ship wouldn't have sunk.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yes, Bette Midler sued the ad agency for Ford. It was actually the Lincoln Mercury division, apparently in 1985. I don't know why I remember this crap. Sued for $10 million. The judge gave her $400,000.
Which is still a victory.
Yeah, no. And they were like, the ad agency did the wrong thing. They absolutely did the wrong thing, so they were guilty. They said that they were trying to create a credible rendition of the original recording, but not of her voice itself, even though they apparently hired one of her backup singers to sing it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Hello, so they had dirty hands. That was the problem.
Yeah. Well, and they said the backup singer, if you listened to it, you didn't know it wasn't Bette Midler, and that was the problem, because Bette Midler doesn't do ads, so she's like, no. You know, I don't do ads.
I mean, if they should have gone the other way and just hired Lainey Kazan.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, that's from a Bette Midler self-deprecating joke.
Mud will be flung tonight.
Yeah, yeah. That's another album I can credit you with introducing me to, because there's no way that I'd be listening to a lot of Bette Midler, probably. Except for, of course, The Rose. Because The Rose is one of those sad, sad, sad songs that's beautiful.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So,
it's a terrible movie.
I haven't seen it. Don't want to. I know the song.
It's a terrible movie.
Excellent. I don't have to watch it then.
Yeah, I know. I'll just cut to the chase now. Bette Midler cries. Terrible movie.
Yeah.
Why don't you just go watch Beaches?
Also don't need to watch that movie.
Yeah. No, never mind.
Yeah. See, I don't watch a lot of sad movies on purpose. I mean, occasionally, but yeah, I usually get trapped into a sad movie because I don't know it's not going to be what I really thought it was. It's like freaking Hair, the musical Hair.
I was just talking about that with Mom.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that movie, to me, and just because I was like 17 or 16 the time I saw it, and it hit me at the moment where it's like, this is a horribly tragic ending to this whole story. It's very, very sad. And even the last song, it's like, it's horrible. So, you can let the sun shine in all you want, but I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. Mom, to this day, she said, it wasn't when I was in Seattle with her and dad a couple weeks ago. She said, Eric didn't talk to me for 2 weeks. And I'm like, rightly so.
Oh, it's because it made me cry. I mean, as a man in his teens, it was horrible.
Well, I think none of us were prepared for that movie. You were of a greater age to be able to understand it. I got it, but I didn't impact me. Certainly not as much as when I was 8 years old and, you know, 8 years old and watching Lassie in like the living room and then, you know, the end of the movie and I don't know why I'm bawling. Like, I have no idea why I'm bawling, but I'm just bawling. Like, can't pick myself up off the floor. Like, go, you know, and trying to tell mom why I'm bawling, and she thinks, you know, she doesn't know what the hell's going on. And, you know, Mr. Talking Mommy, you know, like 8-year-old me.
Oh, let me tell you, and I don't know, I mean, it's funny because, you know, it's being a guy is one thing, and I hate being manipulated by movies or commercials or whatever in such a negative way. I mean, again, I know movies are meant to manipulate you because it's telling a story. And storytelling right. is making you feel something, if it's done right. successfully. But I'm not going to listen to The Eyes of an Angel and watch the Sarah McLachlan video or commercial.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't want to see sad dog eyes looking at me as they tell you to send you the money because of sad dogs. I also don't want to see starving children.
It's funny because whenever the ASPCA ad comes on here, Derek gets up and leaves the room because, you know, he's like, oh, the feels. I get it in the feels. I have to leave.
Exactly.
And I'm like, oh, God.
Or remember those old Mormon commercials? Family. It's about time.
Oh, no. You know what still gets me to this day? Still. And they don't play them anymore. Thank God. Thank God they don't play these ads anymore. There were the public service announcements. Like the home videos of little kids and their birthdays.
Oh, yes. Oh.
And then they're like, you know, killed by a drunk driver.
Oh, exactly. No, whenever I see when YouTube was just mostly like kids' birthday parties and stuff, you're like, I don't want to watch this because I know how it's going to end. They die. Exactly. They were killed by a drunk driver.
Exactly. No, and so those are the kinds of things that would get me. And I'm just like, you know, oh, God, I can't watch. I can't turn the channel fast enough. So. That's why now I'm like, I love the DVR because I would just pause live TV until it buffers. And then I'm just like, nope, I don't even have to watch this.
Well, and I understand only on an intellectual level that there are people that like to watch sad movies and read sad books so that they can cry and have a nice little cry and then move about with their day.
No.
I don't understand that. Again, I'll blame being a guy in America.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like... No, that's okay. No, that not into it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm not going to sit down and, you know, watch, you know, The Way We Were or, you know, yeah, Brian's Song.
Yeah, exactly. If I don't want to even watch The Fault in Their Stars or whatever. I mean, you know, if it's a funny movie and someone ends up dying at the end, or if it's a horror movie and everybody in the entire world dies at the end, that's great. But yeah, I don't want to be manipulated emotionally. I don't need to see Marley. I did, but I don't need to see Marley and Me. Because, you know, here, spoiler alert, dog dies. That's what happens when dogs, they die.
It's I totally did not watch Marley and Me.
No, and you shouldn't. There's no need to. Maybe if you were having trouble because your own dog passed away and you really wanted to have a good cry, you would watch it. But still, I don't want to, even if it's just me and the television, I feel like I would be breaking down in front of Owen Wilson, which I don't need.
Oh, no, that would never end well.
Yeah, so there you go. Anyway.
Owen Wilson. Why did you have to bring that up?
Well, hey, he's not a bad actor either. He's just, you know, anyway. Well, wasn't he in Marley and Me?
I didn't see it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was me. He played me.
He played you. No,
no, he didn't play me. Watch. No, he didn't play Eric. He played the titular me in Marley and Me.
Oh.
Because Marley was played by the dog.
You just like that term.
I do. I do like
it. I know you do.
So, thoughts about Kingpin? Thoughts about music?
The movie, you need to see it if you haven't seen it. Upon rewatching it, you know, it was okay. Not the greatest movie on rewatch, even though, admittedly, I've probably seen it a dozen times. So, I think... I know what's going to happen. I haven't not seen it. Not enough time has elapsed between viewings for me to be able to forget what had happened. So that's why it wasn't quite as funny.
Yeah.
But if you haven't seen it, see it. Otherwise, you know.
Sure, and it's a dumb, funny movie.
Right.
And it'll make you feel good. That's good. Right. I mean, that's, you know, it'll make you laugh, but it'll also, it's got some heart to it.
It wasn't the waste of an evening.
Yeah, and it just proves that I think Woody Harrelson is one of the greatest actors of our generation.
Well.
Not using this as the only evidence, but I think he is a compelling screen presence.
Sometimes.
I'm hard-pressed to find out anything I didn't like him in. Yeah, we'll have to have that discussion at some point. But
yeah.
But I'm not going to see him in the movie where he goes and tells people that their sons have died in combat either. Don't need to see that movie.
No.
Yeah. He was excellent in Will and Grace.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Anyway. So, thoughts about next week's movie?
What would you like to watch?
Oh, it's well, your turn to pick, I'm pretty sure.
No, I picked Kingpin.
Oh, that's true. What were the rest of them on that list?
You put this off on me every time. You make me pick every time.
Well, no, I mean, I can pick.
There was a Princess Bride, but I think you wanted to wait for that.
Yeah, for some reason, the Princess Bride just isn't, I don't know. I think I want to watch something more. Is there like a thriller?
Okay, so I'm looking at my, my shelf right now. I'm skipping the ones that there's just not going to happen. I've got Primary Colors. I've got, what else is here?
Do you have Wag the Dog?
I do have Wag the Dog.
You want to do Wag the Dog?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, Wag the Dog it is.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time, so we'll see how it holds up. And is Woody Harrelson in that too?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so excellent. You know,
he plays a serviceman.
I am going through and now cataloging a little more thoroughly the movies that we've watched, including the writers and the directors and the actors, because they keep coming up, you know?
Right. I heard you and Drew talking briefly about that. So.
There's lots of links between all these movies, and every time you pick a new movie, there's another link from it. And now, when I put in my notes, I say, so-and-so from this movie we watched, and so-and-so from this other movie we watched, and don't have to mention their whole resume.
Right. I don't think we, although I don't think there's a link to this movie, is there?
Woody Harrelson.
Oh, yeah, but I mean,
and Dustin Hoffman.
But the last movie to this one.
Oh, no, there's not a direct link between these two. Oh, dear Lord. Well, that was just a way for us to wrap it up. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.